Hello and welcome to the Decorum Talking Newspaper for the week ending Saturday the 13th of December 2025. This is Andrew and the other readers are Jane and Graham from Team 4, and we welcome Penny, one of DTN's relief readers, who joins us today. The editor is Mary. DTN sponsors for this week are Neptune Heating and Plumbing. Whatever heating or plumbing services you may need, speak to the experts. Call Neptune Heating and Plumbing on 01442 737 916. Most of our news items are taken from the Hemel Hempstead, Berkhamsted and Tring Gazette and Express newspaper, and all telephone numbers will be on the local code of 01442 unless stated otherwise. The headlines this week are Nursery Workers Indecent Picks Shame, Local School is Best in UK, War Veteran Honoured, Pupils Meet Top Author. These and other stories follow. Here is the news.
Hello, this is Jane. A nursery worker from Hemel Hempstead working with youngsters in the Decorum area has admitted to making indecent images of children. At a hearing in St Albans Crown Court last week, Zara Lancashire, 20, admitted to 4 counts of distributing indecent images of children and 3 counts of making indecent images of children. She also admitted 4 counts of publishing an obscene article via a chat application. Lancashire will be held in custody until a sentencing hearing, which is scheduled for St Albans Crown Court on March 5th. Prior to her arrest, Lancashire worked at Flower Pots Day Nursery in King's Langley. Detective Chief Inspector James Howarth from Hertfordshire Constabulary's Public Prosecution Command said, "Zara Lancashire has admitted to serious offences committed while in a position of trust. We welcome that she will now be brought to justice," he added. "I want to reassure the public and parents of the nursery that following a thorough investigation by my detectives, which involved speaking to over 100 parents and guardians, no evidence was found relating to any child who attended Flower Day Pots Nursery. All of Lancashire's offences were committed online. I would like to thank those parents and guardians for their patience and cooperation during what was understandably a very worrying time."
Hello, I'm Graham. A school in Hemel Hempstead has been named the best of its kind in the country. In its upcoming Parent Power Guide 2026, the Sunday Times has named Abbots Hill School as its best independent school for 11 to 16 year olds. Its upcoming edition for 2026 is the 33rd annual Schools Guide the major national newspaper has produced. It has been revealed that ahead of the 28-page supplement being released on Sunday, that Abbots Hill School is one of its national chart toppers. The guide also includes regional league tables in a number of categories relating to the quality of schools up and down the country. In this year's guide, readers will survey results and research on primary and secondary state and independent schools. Running alongside the supplement is a national database of more than 2,000 schools by name, local authority, town and postcode, the newspaper revealed. Sharon Shansheath, head at Abbots Hill School, said, "I'm absolutely delighted and immensely proud that Abbots Hill has been named Independent 11 to 16 School of the Year. While this award recognises the exceptional achievements of our senior school, it is important to remember that our school journey begins at just 6 months old. Pupils throughout the entire school benefit from our rich whole school educational offer that builds progressively towards GCSEs. This award is a testament to the dedication of our staff, the enthusiasm of our students, and the unwavering support of our parents and wider community. It captures the balance of high ambition and genuine warmth that characterises our supportive community, and it is an honour to see our school recognised in this way. It's a chance for our pupils to embrace change in a supported way, an important step before facing the bigger leap at 18. Because we don't have a sixth form, by year 11 our pupils are leaders in the school. They take on meaningful roles such as head girl or prefect. They mentor younger students, lead productions and represent the school at public events. These experiences build resilience, self-belief and maturity. Our students leave school ready to face new challenges with ambition and confidence," explained Ms. Shansheath.
Hello, this is Penny continuing that story. Anthony Spencer, CEO at Mill Hill Education Group, congratulated the school. This is pleasing but not entirely surprising recognition of the superb education provided at Abbots Hill. It is a testament to the hard work and dedication of the staff who are committed to delivering the very best education for every child. It was a privilege to welcome the school into the Mill Hill Education Group, and the professional collaboration between our excellent schools has been rewarded with a flurry of national awards over the last 12 months alone, he said. Helen Davis, editor of the Sunday Times Parent Power Guide, said, "The educational landscape is testing. Budget challenges, rising student mental health issues, special educational needs, and an increasingly uncertain future. But there is also so much to celebrate from the dedication of teachers who are finding ever more innovative and impactful ways to enrich their students and give them the very best start in life. As well as celebrating the academic excellence of the top schools, it is uplifting to see how they are shaping their students to be ready for the 21st century and instilling a lifelong love of learning. Parents are encouraged to use the guide to compare schools within their area or check them against other institutions across the nation."
A ceremony at Heath Lane Cemetery finally honoured Robert James Bates of Boxmoor, who died as a result of his service in the Great War nearly 109 years ago. Born in 1894, Robert worked locally at Foster's Sawmills on Kingsland Road before enlisting in the Hertfordshire Regiment in 1915. After serving briefly in France, he was hospitalised with pleurisy and later diagnosed with tubercular peritonitis, leading to his discharge as unfit for service. He died in the West Harts Infirmary on the 5th of December 1916 at the young age of 22, just months after returning home. Although his family commemorated him on the Hemel Hempstead War Memorial following his demise, Robert was not officially recognised by the Commonwealth War Graves Commission, CWGC, as a victim of the war. This oversight was discovered by local researchers Brendan Sheridan and David Logan, who gathered evidence and submitted it to the In From the Cold, IFCP, project. IFCP is dedicated to the task of achieving recognition for the thousands of men and women who died in the service of Britain and the Commonwealth during the two world wars, where there is no official recognition of their sacrifice. Happily, in 2019, CWGC accepted the evidence provided, and a headstone was erected on Robert's grave in 2024. He was also added to the National Roll of Honour as an official victim of the war. On Saturday, November the 8th, Father David Cherry of St Mary and St Joseph gave a blessing at Robert's grave and led a short service of remembrance in the presence of representatives from the Royal British Legion, members of his congregation, and other interested parties. Brendan Sheridan gave a short reading telling Robert's story, and Sue Rose, chair of the Hemel Hempstead branch of the Royal British Legion, delivered the exhortation, emphasising the importance of remembrance. The service concluded with the national anthem and the dipping of the standard, marking a dignified and heartfelt tribute to Robert's sacrifice so many years ago. The stories of many of the men commemorated on the Hemel Hempstead War Memorial who died in the Great War can be found at hemelheroes.com.
Prep pupils at Berkhamsted School had the unique opportunity of meeting best-selling author Geoff Kinney as he visited the school for his final UK stop on a tour to promote his new book, Party Pooper. Pupils from Berkhamsted School were joined by St Thomas More Catholic Primary School. In keeping with the book's surprise party theme, Kinney's visit was kept a secret from the pupils, making his appearance all the more exciting. When he first appeared on stage, everyone was super excited and so shocked, a pupil expressed. A real-life author was there in front of our eyes. The visit featured an engaging show where pupils and teachers were invited on stage to play party games and compete for prizes. He promoted the importance of reading and encouraged pupils to embrace their creativity. As Year 4 teacher Rachel Willis commented, the visit was about encouraging the joy of reading. When interviewed about the show, Kinney commented, "When I was a kid, I never really met any authors, and I didn't envisage myself in that profession. So I hope that today there'll be a kid whose career ambitions are sparked from this event." The event was hugely popular, Miss Willis further explained. "It's hard to express the volume of excitement that we experience today. This will have felt incredibly special for the children. I think we were one of the only two schools in the country who were having a visit." One parent expressed, "My daughter was so elated when she returned home from school to tell us about her Wimpy Kid experience. She described it as truly the best day ever." A spokesman from St. Thomas More Catholic Primary School said, "We would like to express our enormous gratitude for inviting us to your Diary of a Wimpy Kid event. It was truly an iconic, exciting, and unforgettable experience for all our pupils and staff. Our students were buzzing with excitement long after the event ended, and it's clear that experiences like this help inspire a lifelong love of reading."
A cocaine and heroin dealer operating in Hemel Hempstead has been jailed after being investigated as part of a wider operation disrupting a gang. John Ackerman, aged 42, from Marlowe's, has been sentenced to over 10 years in jail. His sentencing relates to a larger police operation investigating the supply of cocaine and heroin across the Hemel Hempstead area from May 2024 until his arrest. Hertfordshire Constabulary has revealed that police officers discovered half a kilo of cocaine and £7,000 while tracking Ackerman. He was sentenced at Luton Crown Court last Friday to 10 years and 4 months in prison for 16 counts of conspiracy to supply Class A drugs. A spokesperson for Hertfordshire Constabulary said Ackerman was the principal member of the gang involved in distributing cocaine across Hemel Hempstead and surrounding areas. "We conducted an in-depth investigation into the gang's activities, compiling evidence over several months. We will not leave any stone unturned in pursuing these kinds of organised crime groups that deal drugs and exploit vulnerable people. The removal of a significant amount of hard drugs from the streets will make our communities safer and reduce associated crime and violence. This operation was the result of intelligence supplied by the community. If you have information about drug dealings, tell us and we will deal with those responsible."
This year you can pick your perfect Christmas tree at the Hospice of St Francis in Berkhamsted while supporting local hospice care. From Saturday the 29th of November, you can visit the hospice on Spring Garden Lane and choose from a selection of trees and wreaths with £8 from every tree sale going towards the care provided at the hospice. James Rogers from the Real Christmas Tree Farm kindly donates £8 from tree sales at the hospice to support their specialist care for people living with life-limiting illnesses. The trees are grown locally in Ashridge, and over the years the money raised from this initiative would cover the cost of over 700 home visits by a specialist palliative care assistant. James explained why he supports the hospice every year. "The Hospice of St Francis has a very special place in our hearts here at the Real Christmas Tree Farm. They have not only helped some of my own family members, but also some of our colleagues. They do so many amazing things for our community, and we are very grateful and happy to support their fundraising this Christmas." You can pick out a tree at the Hospice of St Francis between Wednesday and Sunday every week from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. until Saturday the 20th of December. The website is stfrancis.org.uk/events/fundraising/Christmas-tree-sales.
Tring's newest care home has marked its latest construction milestone. The Care UK team were joined by the Mayor of Tring, Councillor Paul de Koning, for a special topping out ceremony at Eggleton House on Miswell Lane, which is set to open in summer 2026. After making his way up to the roof of the building, Mr. de Koning laid the last tile to mark the external build as officially complete. He was then given a special tour of the home and spoke with the team about plans for the internal design and the future of Eggleton House. The mayor said, "As a representative of the Tring Town community, I was delighted to be invited by the staff of the building firm to be part of the topping out ceremony, which is undertaken to recognise the completion of the external part of the building. As the builders now concentrate on the internal side of the structure, we can look forward to the final completion next year. Having been given this opportunity to visit the new development, it's clear that Eggleton House will provide an important resource for the town in respect of caring accommodation. Once complete, the multi-million pound purpose-built care home will provide residential, dementia and respite care for up to 72 people, with facilities including a cinema, hair and beauty salon and a pub." Jake Higgins, Development Project Manager at Care UK, said, "We're delighted to be adding to our ever-expanding portfolio of residential care homes. Eggleton House is our third home in Hertfordshire and follows the success of Snowdrop House, which opened in Ware in 2017, highlighting our commitment to enhancing the standard of care in the region. We can't wait to give members of the community the grand tour once the home's interior is complete." Designed to enable residents to lead active and fulfilled lives while also promoting independence, Eggleton House will incorporate plenty of space for leisure activities and hobbies. The layout of the building will be configured into a series of individual suites, each having a dedicated lounge-stroke dining room to facilitate the creation of close-knit communities. For more information about Eggleton House, please visit careuk, that's all one word, .com/Eggleton, Eggleton, hyphen house.
Community Action Decorum, a leading charity dedicated to improving lives across the borough of Decorum, is pleased to announce the appointment of Peter Ashman as the new chair of its board of trustees. Peter succeeds Colin Gage, who steps down after many years of distinguished service as chair, but will continue to contribute as a trustee. Peter brings extensive leadership experience from the not-for-profit and publishing sectors, having previously served as CEO of BMJ and chair of the Association of Learned and Professional Society Publishers, ALP-SP. He has been a trustee of Community Action Decorum since 2022 and is well known locally for his involvement in charitable initiatives and as a presenter on Radio Decorum. Commenting on his appointment, Peter said, "I am delighted to take on the role of chair at Community Action Decorum. This charity plays a vital role in supporting thousands of people in our community through services that enhance well-being, employability and social inclusion. I look forward to working with our dedicated team and trustees to build on this impact." Community Action Decorum also welcomes four new trustees to strengthen its governance and strategic direction. Louise Towler, award-winning digital strategist and managing director of Indigo Tree, bringing expertise in technology, accessibility and sustainability. Audrey Waitman, experienced leader with a strong background in community engagement and governance. Liz Green, OBE DL, former High Street Sheriff of Hertfordshire and Deputy Lieutenant, widely recognised for her work in literacy, rehabilitation and volunteering. Graham Elliott, local government representative and advocate for community development. Outgoing Chair Colin Gage, who led the charity through significant growth and challenges, including the pandemic, commented, "It has been an honour to serve as Chair. I am proud of what we have achieved together, from expanding services to supporting thousands of residents during the cost of living crisis. I look forward to continuing as a trustee and supporting Peter and the new board."
King's Langley School has secured advanced practice in the nationally recognised Emotional Mental Wellbeing in Schools Mark Award. This award reflects the embedded evidence-based wellbeing practices in place across all areas of school life, ensuring that emotional and mental health is prioritised just as highly as academic progress. This creates a culture that empowers students to build resilience, develop positive relationships, and seek support when they need it. Ultimately, this achievement strengthens the foundations for happier, healthier learners and helps every student unlock their potential for life. The awarding body stated King's Langley has a strong and committed team of pastoral staff who dedicate time to various aspects of how children can be supported. The family support worker, mental health lead and school counsellor are tireless in their endeavours to seek support for students and work continuously to drive the mental health offer forward. An unusual yet critical element of this team is without doubt librarian Jane Hill, who has a unique opportunity to build relationships with some of the more vulnerable students. Walking around King's Langley School feels calm, well-managed and positive, and students are chatty and well-mannered. The sixth form building is a relaxed space filled with signposting to mental health support services. This fantastic accomplishment demonstrates a deep, sustained commitment to creating a school environment where every student feels safe.
Two bundles of fun and love are Finch, tabby and white male, and Lark, black and white female, who are approximately 5.5 month old siblings who are now looking for their forever home together. They are shy on first meeting new people, but once they get to know you, they are, as it says on the tin, kittens in all their glory. They love their food and they enjoy playing with all their toys and tower toys and are more than happy for you to join in. They would be happier in a quieter home environment, adults, older children, where they can build up their confidence with their new owners and in their new home. Experienced owners who will give them the time and patience going forward and also happy to have lots of play would be welcomed. Once they've had their extended settling in period, they would love direct access to a garden away from main and through roads. For more information, contact the Cats Protection, Hemel Hempstead and Berkhamsted branch via cats.org.uk/Hemel Hempstead or telephone 0345 371 1851.
David Taylor MP today announced the first recipient of the newly launched Community Champion Awards, confirming that Gary Cullum from Bovingdon has been selected for his unparalleled service and dedication to his village. Gary, the founder and driving force behind the local newspaper, the Bovingdon Villager, was chosen after receiving multiple powerful nominations that universally described him as the indispensable heart and soul of Bovingdon. David Taylor MP commented on the selection. The response to the Community Champion Awards was incredible, but Gary's nomination stood out immediately. It's clear that he is the absolute backbone of Bovingdon. Neighbours and villagers didn't just nominate him, they credited him with being instrumental in strengthening the wonderful village spirit. Gary's contributions span nearly every facet of community life. An event organiser, he's been a major contributor to the teams running the village's largest annual gatherings over many years, including the late Queen's Platinum Jubilee, Christmas Fair, Summer Fair, Classic Car Shows, and the 80th anniversary of D-Day, all of which have brought residents together throughout recent years. Local communications. Through the Bovingdon Villager, launched at the start of the COVID era, he ensures residents are informed on all relevant local events, issues, news, and achievements. Civic duties. He is heavily involved in the cricket club and voluntarily organises the crucial upkeep of the St Lawrence Church grounds by bringing a monthly gardening team together. For the past 2 years, he's coordinated the village poppy appeal for the Royal British Legion, working closely with local and neighbouring Chipperfield volunteers. And go-to guy. Nominations praised him for serving as the trusted primary point of contact for anyone in Bovingdon with a problem or a question, demonstrating service that goes far beyond typical volunteering. Gary's dedication is a masterclass in community leadership, Taylor added. He embodies the very best of what these awards were launched to celebrate, those individuals who go the extra mile without expectation of reward, marking our area as a truly special place to live. On behalf of the entire community, thank you, Gary.
Thursday, 11th of December 2025, marks the 20th anniversary of the Bunsfield fire. On Sunday, 11th of December 2005, Hemel Hempstead was propelled into the national spotlight following a major explosion at the Bunsfield Oil Depot, which triggered the largest peacetime fire in Europe. Emergency services declared a major incident at 6:08 a.m. on the day, initiating an extensive firefighting operation involving 25 fire engines, 20 support vehicles, and 180 firefighters. The fire burned for several days, emitting a large plume of smoke into the atmosphere that dispersed over southern England and beyond. Although, fortunately, there were no fatalities, more than 40 people sustained injuries. The incident caused significant localized damage to buildings, disrupted businesses and transport networks, and prompted the evacuation of 2,000 residents living closest to the site. During the emergency response, we secured more than 300 properties, both council-owned and private, damaged by the blast, and arranged temporary accommodation for 30 families who were unable to return to their homes. A total of 370 businesses, employing around 16,500 people, were also affected. When the fire was out and the emergency response was over, Decorum Council led the local community task force set up to coordinate the recovery phase.
This week in history. December the 14th, 1962. Mariner 2 sent back the first close-up pictures of the planet Venus. On this day last year, comedian Chris McCausland said anything can happen with support and determination after he became the first blind contestant to win Strictly Come Dancing. December 15th, 1991. More than 470 people drowned when a ferry carrying mainly Egyptian pilgrims sank in the Red Sea. On this day last year, ABC News agreed to pay $15 million towards Donald Trump's presidential library to settle a defamation lawsuit over anchor George Stephanopoulos's inaccurate on-air assertion that the president-elect had been found civilly liable for raping writer E. Jean Carroll. December 16th, 2010. Rare first editions of Ian Fleming's James Bond spy book sold for almost £30,000 when they went under the hammer at Dominic Winter Auctioneers in Gloucestershire. The book that introduced 007 to the world, Casino Royale, sold for £19,000. December 17th, 1939, the German battleship Admiral Graf Spee was scuttled off Montevideo, Uruguay, after the Battle of the River Plate. And on this day last year, Olympic 800 metres champion Keely Hodgkinson was voted the BBC Sports Personality of the Year.
Now we come to the information slot. This is followed by the obituaries, what's on, and any more news.
Applications for Decorum Green Community Grant Scheme are now open, supporting local projects focusing on protecting the environment, tackling climate change, and encouraging local community engagement. Grants of £3,000, £5,000 and £10,000 are available. In the previous funding round, 2024-25, more than £75,000 was successfully awarded to 13 community projects across the borough. This includes the Wigington Biodiversity Enhancements Project, a collaboration between St Bartholomew's Church and Wigington Primary School to plant native trees, install wildlife boxes for birds, bats and insects to enhance local biodiversity. The deadline for applications is Friday the 23rd of January 2026.
The obituaries in the Gazette this week. Anne Dunks of Hemel Hempstead died on Wednesday, 19th November 2025, aged 74 years. A funeral service will take place on Wednesday, 17th December at 12:30 p.m. at St George's United Reformed Church, Chawden. Jean Vera Langley of High Ridge Road, Hemel Hempstead, died on Friday, 28th November, aged 99 years. A funeral service will take place at West Hearts Crematorium, South Chapel, on Monday, 15th December at 11 a.m. Richard Porter of Long Chawden passed away peacefully at Watermill House Care Home on Tuesday, 18th November, aged 82 years. A funeral service will take place at St John's Church, Boxmore, on Monday, 22nd December at 12 noon. May they rest in peace.
What's on? At Denby Theatre in Tring, Cinderella on behalf of the Tring Arts Trust. From 30th of December to 3rd of January 2026, tickets from £12. Running time, 1 hour 50 minutes plus interval. Age rating, suitable for all ages. Tring's annual pantomime is back with the usual fun and frolics. Cheer, boo and sing along to this family favourite, then join us on stage at the end of show. Will Cinderella meet Prince Charming, or will her stepmother get in the way? Will the nasty sepsisters run out of hair remover? Will the prince's ball be bigger than last time? Featuring familiar faces and some new ones with not a celebrity in sight, the cast and crew look forward to welcoming everyone to this year's pantomime. Book online at denbytheatre.org.
Local pantomimes. Jack and the Beanstalk at Eric Morecambe Centre, Harpenden, December the 6th to December the 30th. Theo Main from hit BBC show The Traitors plays Flesh Creep, and much-loved Harpenden panto dame Josh Handley returns to play Tilly Trot. Call 01582 767 525 to book. Jack and the Beanstalk, Watford Palace Theatre until January the 4th. Ready the beanpoles and brace for magic. Jack and the Beanstalk is climbing back onto the stage. Bursting with laughs and much-loved songs, the panto promises a world of wonder, amazement and full-blown festive mischief. Call 01923 225 671 to book. Goldilocks and the Three Bears, Milton Keynes Theatre, from December the 6th to January the 11th. Join comedian, TV and musical theatre star Brian Connolly as Milton Keynes Theatre is transformed into a sensational circus where everything is possible and anything could happen. Brian is joined on stage by his daughter Lucy Connolly, who stars as Goldilocks, along with a cast including renowned dame David Robbins as Dame Betty Barnum, panto villain Gary Milner as the evil ringmaster, magician Phil Hitchcock as the magical Mysterioso, and direct from Zippo's Circus, the Timbuktu Tumblers. Visit atgtickets.com/Milton Keynes to book.
Musical theatre now at the Denby Theatre in Tring. Chicago, a teen edition, is on from the 20th of January to the 24th of January 2026. Tickets are from £9, and the running time is 90 minutes. The age rating is 10+. Brought to you by Tring School, this bold and vibrant production showcases a talented cast of students who bring the roaring 20s to life with energy, style and flair. From the infectious jazz rhythms to the stunning costumes and choreography, every element of the production has been crafted to dazzle and entertain. You can book online at denbytheatre, all one word, .org.
And films at the Cineworld Cinema this week include Zootropolis 2, an animation, Five Nights at Freddy's 2, a horror film, Wicked for Good, a musical fantasy film, Silent Night, Deadly Night, 2025, a horror film, Ella McKay, a comedy drama, The Shining, 45th anniversary, a horror film, Fackham Hall, a comedy, Eleanor the Great, a comedy drama, Lurker, a comedy, Eternity, a comedy, Now You See Me, Now You Don't, a diamond heist, Pillion, a comedy drama, Predator, Badlands, an action film, The Running Man, 2025, an action film, Prime Minister, a documentary about Jacinda Ardern, Christmas Season 2025, The Muppet Christmas Carol, a comedy. All popular films are provided to cinemas with an audio description track. Please mention your requirements at the time of booking.
Music. Saturday 13th of December, Berkhamsted Town Choral Service. In St Peter's Church at 6 p.m., a service of congregational carol singing, More information at stpetersburkhampstead.org.uk. Sunday, 14th of December, I heard a voice from heaven in Berkhamsted Town Hall at 4 p.m. Celebrate the reverential and the sacred, the imagination and wonder of Christmas with music by Vivaldi, Purcell and more. More information at behindthemirror.org. Saturday, 20th of December, Tring Choral Society Winter Concert in St. Peter and St. Paul Church at 7:30 p.m. Bach's Christmas Oratorio. More information at tringchoral.org.uk. Tuesday, 23rd of December, Chiltern Chamber Choir perform Bach's Magnificat and Haydn's Missa in Tempore Belli at St. Peter's Church, Berkhamsted at 7:30 p.m. More information at chilternchamberchoir.com.
Comedy. Advanced warning of an event at the Old Town Hall, Screaming Blue Murder, January 2026. This is taking place on Monday the 26th of January 2026 at 8 p.m. The acts are Chris Stokes and Suze Kempner. The compere is Bennett Aaron. The price is $11.99 and please note there are no concession tickets for this performance. The duration is 20 minutes plus an interval and this is suitable for 18 plus. Book online at oldtownhall.co.uk or telephone 01442 228 091.
And now some Hertfordshire County Council news. Hertfordshire County Council's forecast overspend of £6.2 million is lower than in previous years, councillors have stressed, just days after staff were told to stop all non-essential spending. Latest budget data presented to the County Council's Cabinet last Tuesday forecasts a deficit of £6.2 million by the end of this financial year. And as previously reported by the Local Democracy Reporting Service, Deputy Chief Executive Scott Crudgington has now written to all County Council budget holders asking them to avoid non-essential spending wherever possible. He has acknowledged ongoing efforts to find savings, juggle scarce budgets, and to pivot services to meet increasing need without the resources to match. And he has asked them to assess the urgency of new roles, stressing that budgets are the maximum amount of money available, not a spending target. But at the meeting of the County Council's Cabinet on Tuesday, councillors appear to be more upbeat about the council's financial situation. Executive Member for Resources and Performance, Councillor Chris Lucas, stressed that the £6.2 million figure was 0.5% of the council's £1.2 billion revenue budget. And he suggested that the projected overspend, which is within the council's £10 million contingency, was lower than that forecast at the same point in previous years. Councillor Lucas said, "I'd like to thank all officers for their hard work in ensuring that the council's finances are kept under tight control. This is no easy task, given the economic and political landscape that we find ourselves in, and the officers involved, all officers across the organisation, should be commended for all their hard work." And Leader of the Council, Councillor Steve Jarvis, said, "The overspend, and the overspend is clearly unwelcome, is a very small proportion of the budget and is significantly lower than has been the case in some previous years."
Hertfordshire County Councillors are this week to formally discuss events that led to Conservative members walking out of a meeting before a crucial vote on local government reorganisation. The extraordinary meeting of the County Council on November 19th had been called so councillors could consider proposals to replace Hertfordshire's existing two-tier structure with two, three or four unitary councils. And at the end of a two-hour debate, a vote was held to determine which of the three options had the most support. But minutes before that vote, Conservative councillors walked out of the council chamber in protest. They did so, they said, because they had been asked to express a preference for one of the three options or to abstain, without an option to formally vote against the proposals. And now Conservative councillor Alexander Curtis, backed by Reform councillor Caroline Clapper and fellow Conservative Christopher Alley, has secured an extraordinary meeting of the council's overview and scrutiny committee this week to examine the controversies of the council meeting, especially around the voting. Councillor Curtis says his concerns focus on the lack of an option to vote against the motion at the meeting, and he says he hopes a consensus can be found to prevent a repeat of the events at the meeting of the full council. The lack of ability for councillors to vote against a motion tabled at a council meeting sets a concerning precedent, Councillor Curtis told the Local Democracy Reporting Service. Many county councillors, including local Conservatives, oppose Keir Starmer's misguided plans for local government reorganisation, which would leave Hertfordshire taxpayers paying more and receiving less. We therefore seek to understand why we were not allowed to vote against the motion tabled by Councillor Jarvis at the recent council meeting, so that lessons can be learned from this episode. The Overview and Scrutiny Committee provides the ideal setting for doing this on a cross-party basis, hence why the special meeting has been called. I hope that consensus can be found on a positive way forward that prevents a repeat of the events we witnessed the other week. The County Council has not commented in advance of the meeting of the Overview and Scrutiny Committee. But following the council meeting, now under scrutiny, they stressed that the vote had been unlike other votes in that it was indicative and non-binding. They also said that members had been able to express their views verbally, which were then included in the minutes. The results of the full council's indicative vote were considered by a meeting of the council's cabinet the following day, and it was at that meeting that a decision was taken that the county council would express a preference for a two unitary option in a document that has since been submitted to the government.
16 formal complaints were levelled against county councillors in 2024-2025, but none were upheld. The number of complaints is included in a report to be considered at a meeting of the County Council's Standards Committee on Monday. 12 of the complaints made between October 1st last year and September 30th this year were deemed not to fall within the jurisdiction of the County Council. That is to say that the alleged act was not committed while the individual was acting in their capacity as a County Councillor. In the remaining four instances, according to the report, no further action was warranted. Details of the complaints and the names of the councillors involved have not been published. A private document summarising the complaints received has only been made available to councillors privately in so-called Part 2 documents. In advance of the meeting, a spokesperson for the County Council confirmed that information was only made public if a councillor was found to have breached the council's members' code of conduct. When complaints are made against a councillor, the name of the individual and the complaint are not made public while under investigation, said the County Council spokesperson. This allows for due process and investigation while also removing the potential for the complaints process to be misused. If, after investigation, it is found that a councillor's conduct or behaviours breach the members' code of conduct, information is made public. Nevertheless, the Local Democracy Reporting Service has made a request for the details under the Freedom of Information Act. When a complaint is made against an individual county councillor in Hertfordshire, it is initially submitted to the council's monitoring officer. The monitoring officer must then determine whether the complaint falls within the jurisdiction of the county council's code of conduct, and that entails a consideration of whether the alleged act occurred when the individual was acting in their capacity as a county councillor. In the next stage of the process, the complaint is subject to an initial assessment by the monitoring officer and one of the council's independent persons, and that initial assessment will determine whether or not the complaint warrants referral for investigation, whether it may be suitable for resolution by apology, mediation or training, or whether it requires referral to the Council's Standards Committee. According to the report, where a finding is made by the Standards Committee The committee's decision will be published on the County Council's website.
Hertfordshire County Council has called meetings with three of the biggest utility firms in the county after concerns were raised over poorly planned roadworks. Council leader, Councillor Steve Jarvis, and Councillor Stephen Giles Medhurst, Chairman of the Highways Committee, met with representatives of Affinity Water earlier last week to discuss improving coordination around roadworks, while meetings with Cadent Gas and UKPN are also in the pipeline. The outcome of the discussion is expected to be revealed at the next meeting of the Highways Cabinet Panel in January. It follows a motion submitted in July by Councillors Matt Cowley and Vishal Patel, requesting the Executive write to government ministers about the inconvenience caused to residents by the issue. In September, Councillor Giles Medhurst wrote to the Secretary of State for Transport asking for higher powers and heavier fines to tackle poorly managed, poorly planned and poorly finished roadworks from utility companies. He raised concerns about the low level of fines, £80 for breaching permit conditions and £300 for unauthorised roadworks, which he described as not a meaningful disincentive for multi-million pound companies. Councillor Giles Medhurst, who took over the portfolio following the May local government elections, added, "I was surprised and frustrated to find that local authorities have no power to fine utility companies for failing to repair covers in the pavement or road. These compose a significant hazard to pedestrians and road users, and while we can issue a defect notice, we have no power to charge or fine companies, and therefore no way to encourage them to fix these quickly."
And carrying on that story, in response, the Minister for Roads and Buses, Simon Lightwood, wrote that fixed penalty notices for specific streetworks offences will be doubled in January. Elsewhere, overrun charges of up to £10,000 per day will soon include weekends and bank holidays as well as weekdays. However, the Minister added that the government believes local authorities have sufficient powers under the current arrangement to manage the quality of streetworks. The matter was discussed at a meeting of the County Council's Highways Cabinet Panel earlier this month. Councillor Matt Cowley, one of the proposers of the original motion, said, "One of the things I've heard quite a lot since I got elected in May is frustration with the volume of roadworks on our road network. When I've been looking into this, quite a lot of the time, the council does a bit of work and then some utility company comes along a couple of weeks later, and it's just not got the level of coordination that I think residents expect. I think we need to do more to show residents that we're trying to get these utility companies to coordinate with us, and when works are done, to make sure that they're done to the right standard and that those roadworks aren't left there for too long." Councillor Cowley raised a case example of a utility company gaining a permit 7 days in advance, only to carry out emergency works and forget to cancel the original permit, leading to an unnecessary road closure for 2 days. He added, "It's just common sense to me that some of this stuff isn't resident-focused at the moment. I think we need to make sure the utility companies know that we're going to do absolutely everything we can to make sure that the works they're doing are appropriate, and that they're urgent when they really are urgent, and that the roadworks are only there for as long as they need to be there."
And to end that item, Chairman of the committee, Councillor Stephen Giles Medhurst, said, "We have issued a substantial number of fines, as you'll see from the notebook we sent to the Secretary of State, and we've kept that money in the local authority. But I'd rather we weren't issuing the fines. I'd rather we didn't have traffic lights up when works aren't there, and I'd rather we didn't have roads being dug up without permits." A report stated that utility companies completed around 26,500 works this year up to the end of September. The council issued fixed penalty notices, FPNs, on around 7%, approximately 1,855, of the works undertaken. Just over half of FPNs were because of administrative errors that did not directly affect the travelling public. Many remaining FPNs are due to signing, lighting and guarding failures. Councillors noted the report with an update is expected at the next committee date in January.
Hertfordshire Police and Crime Commissioner is making changes to his office which will save £300,000 in funding. Jonathan Ash Edwards says he has reduced the size of his office by 18% and says the money will be relocated. A spokesperson for the Commissioner said the changes have been in the works for months and predates recent news that the government is planning to axe the position from all forces across the country. Previously, Commissioner Ash Edwards has said he is concerned about the potential closure of the Hertfordshire Commissioner role. He said the move could weaken scrutiny on the police force in Hertfordshire and lead to centralised policy decisions being made which don't reflect Hertfordshire's priorities. Commissioner Ash Edwards did not release specifics on how the cuts were achieved, but said he had streamlined his team to deliver better value for money. He said, "While politicians normally expand their offices, I've done the opposite by cutting mine by 18% to free up over £300,000. Since my election, I've been modernising how the role of PCC works with a firm focus on the public's priorities. Taxpayers believe that public service should always provide value for money, and I agree. My priority is to make every pound count for the people of Hertfordshire, and freeing up money, more money for policing and community safety is the right thing to do. Over the next 29 months, I'm fully committed to delivering on the priorities in the police and crime plan and working to make Hertfordshire safer. It's important that I have the right team in place to support me with that work."
Complaints against Hertfordshire Constabulary rose higher than the national average this year, according to newly revealed statistics. Police Watchdog, the Independent Office for Police Conduct, the IOPC, last week published its police complaints data for 24-25. The report showed that 1,474 complaints against Hertfordshire Constabulary were logged in the 12 months from April 2024 to March 2025, representing a 16.7% increase compared to 23-24. This was higher than the national data, which showed an 11% increase in complaints logged by the 43 police forces across England and Wales over the previous 12 months, rising to 95,000, the most on record since the IOPC began gathering complaints data. Despite this, Hertfordshire proportionally had a lower ratio of complaints compared to neighbouring forces. In Hertfordshire, the number of complaints logged per 1,000 employees stands at 330. This is lower than Essex, 495, Bedfordshire, 405, Cambridgeshire, 406, and Thames Valley Police, 424. Elsewhere, among the 20 IOPC investigations into Hearts Police in 2024-25, five resulted in findings being made against the force. This percentage is the same as the previous year, when findings were made in 4 of 16 cases. This figure places Hearts in the same league as its neighbours, with the IOPC making findings in 27% of investigations in Essex, 21% in Bedfordshire, 20% in Cambridge, and 35% in Thames Valley. IOPC Director of Oversight and Casework, David Ford, acknowledged the overall increase in the number of complaints, but noted that many police forces have improved the way they handle and record complaints. Detective Chief Superintendent William Hodgkinson, head of Bedfordshire, Cambridgeshire and Hertfordshire Professional Standards Department, said, "We have been working hard with the Hertfordshire Office of the Police and Crime Commissioner to publicise and ensure that residents of our county know how to report matters of dissatisfaction. Everyone working for Hertfordshire Constabulary strives to deliver the best possible service to our communities because we know that is what they deserve. When our service falls below our high standards, we want to know so we can focus on improvement. Information on how the public can make a complaint can be found at shorturl.at/yxyxr, and yxyxr are in uppercase.
The lack of transparency surrounding the decision to plough an additional £18.4 million into four projects to support children with special educational needs and disabilities, SEND, has been highlighted at a meeting of county councillors. The county council had initially allocated £53.8 million for four flagship projects in Croxley Green, Hemel Hempstead, Potter's Bar and Letchworth Garden City. But in July, councillors agreed to increase the funding after being told that without further funding, the schools would not be deliverable. The amount of additional funding was not made public, and the decision was made in a private session of the council's cabinet. But using freedom of information legislation, the Local Democracy Reporting Service has since learned that the amount agreed was £18.4 million. That's an increase of just over a third, 34%, bringing the total budget for the four schemes to £72.2 million. And last Tuesday, November the 25th, Labour councillor Ian Albert referenced the lack of transparency relating to the projects at a meeting of the council's Resources and Performance Cabinet panel. During a discussion of the council's spending over the past 6 months, Councillor Albert suggested that it was not clearly reflected in the report's commentary, and he said that he would have expected more transparency around what was a really important decision. He stressed that it was a decision he welcomed and supported, but he still questioned the level of transparency.
And continuing that item, the four projects to benefit from the additional funds include the relocation of the Breakspear School to a site in Croxley Green and the creation of a satellite suite for the Collett School in Hemel Hempstead. They also include the construction of the planned Journeys Academy for children with communication needs and autism in Potter's Bar and the relocation of the North Harts Education Support Centre in Letchworth Garden City. Following the meeting, a spokesperson for Hertfordshire County Council said that initially the costs had been reported in private due to commercial sensitivity, but they said that the contracts for Journeys and North Harts ESU had now been published in the Council's contracts register, with the budget for Breakspear in the Council's capital monitor for the first 3 months of the financial year. Following the meeting of the Resources and Performance Cabinet panel, Councillor Albert stressed that he was supportive of the projects, but that there could have been greater transparency. And he suggested that as well as being put before the Education SEND and Inclusion Cabinet panel in July, it could have been presented to the Council's Resources and Performance Cabinet panel too. He said, "I do believe that the paper should have been discussed by the resources panel as well as education, because it has implications for capital spend, borrowing and investment." But he also suggested that the overall cost of the four projects could have been published by the council in July. And he said he expected further information to have been included in the performance report presented at the latest meeting of the Resources and Performance Cabinet panel. "It still wasn't transparent at this latest meeting, and that concerns me," said Councillor Albert. "It's important for residents to know what's being spent in totality, even if they don't need to know a specific amount at an individual school, until we have come to an agreement with contractors."
Now some local football news. Lee Allinson says Hemel Hempstead Town side need to start games better after they fell to their second straight defeat on Saturday. The 1-0 loss at Salisbury was the first time this season Hemel have lost two on the bounce. Noah Coppin getting the host goal in the 11th minute, moments after Miller Matthews Lewis had seen a goal ruled out for offside at the other end. Allinson feels there is work to be done given the manner in which the game was lost. Told the club's media, "It's a frustrating one. I won't hide behind the fact the way we are starting games at the moment isn't good enough. I wasn't happy with the first half. Sometimes you don't have any divine right to just come here and play football, but we know what we're like in the second half. We have a goal disallowed, and then a minute later we've given away an absolutely scandalous goal from our point of view. It's not good enough as a group, and we've had a long discussion in the dressing room about maybe needing to change the warm-up slightly or look at a few different things because we're not starting games well enough. In the second half, I thought we were magnificent and we've done everything but put the ball in the net. We've had more chances today than we did at Tunbridge last week and on Tuesday night, but their keeper has kept them in the game. I think Salisbury have one shot in 90 minutes and then obviously two counters at the end of the game where one's hit the post after we'd thrown everything forward. But because of how we started the game and because of the first half performance, we've lost the game and that has to be improved really quickly. Hemel now turn to the FA Trophy where they host Horsham in the third round on Saturday.
Further sports news follows. Basketball. Hemel Storm's final home game of 2025 ended in defeat as Essex Rebels ran out 85-98 victors at the Storm Dome on Saturday night. With Matt Norman, Kai Walker, Hakeem Silla and Jovan Ray all still condemned to the sidelines due to injury. Jake Rothhoger was left with just a seven-man squad and they were unable to compete with the visiting Rebels, albeit not for a lack of trying. Taylor Johnson attempted to take things into his own hands at times and ended with 29 points and 15 rebounds. Darian Nelson-Henry battled hard under the basket as always and secured a 23-point double-double, while Braden Inger also achieved that accolade with 10 points and an almighty 18 rebounds. But fresh off a 50-point outing last weekend, Miles Brown did the damage for the guests with 29 points of his own, and there were strong showings too from Kyron Martin and Tom Chard in a Rebels roster also containing only seven men. Storm, as has often been the case so far this season, fell behind early, losing the first period 20-25. The deficit reached double digits early in the second and had grown to 18 by the half-time buzzer. There was a brief third quarter rally from the hosts, reducing the arrears to 10, but that was as close as they got as Brown and Chard regained control for their side. With his side trailing 61-78 at the final break, Rothhauger cut a frustrated figure and picked up his second technical foul of the game, with just under 9 minutes to play, forcing him to exit the arena for the remainder of the clash. The injured Silla took temporary control and Storm reduced the margin to 11 as they flirted with a late comeback, but it wasn't to be as they fell to a sixth British Championship Basketball League loss of the campaign. A leaky defensive display and a lack of offensive efficiency, shooting only 15% from three-point range, proved costly and they'll hope for an improved performance when they travel to Birmingham next Saturday.
We're coming to the end of this week's news. Sunrise and sunset times for this weekend are 08:01 and 15:52. Don't forget, for those with access to the internet, our news is uploaded to our website soon after the recording each week on Thursday evening. This can be found by visiting dtnhemel.org.uk. For those who are listening to this week's news on Memory Stick, the amenities and services information follow after the final music. Please remove the memory stick from the player, return it to us in the pouch provided, and check the pouch is securely sealed. Turn the label over and post it back to us using any Royal Mail postbox. Thank you for listening. Until next time, it's goodbye from all your readers, the editor, and Jake, who is your technician this week.